Welcome to episode 36 of the Walk and Talk podcast. I'm Greg Johnson, and today is Friday, August 21st, 2020. The topic for this episode is going to be making purchases online. And I certainly would include with that making purchases online from local stores, if that's possible, because that does help support your local economy and local jobs, which is important. But the focus is purchasing online because a lot of people are doing that these days. And to talk about navigating some of those purchase decisions from one end of the purchase process to the other. So the very first kind of macro perspective, big perspective, is to decide where you're going to buy from. Certainly, Amazon comes to mind. Walmart is competing with Amazon for online sales, so Walmart is now trying to be a mega vendor online, not just of their own products that they might have in store or products that they might have in a warehouse somewhere, but also providing a platform for other vendors to sell products through the Walmart website. Sort of like on Amazon, you can sometimes buy something. You might sometimes see something listed where, you know, it's ships and sold by Amazon, but there are other times where it's shipped and sold by somebody else, even though it's listed on Amazon. Amazon will collect the payment, but somebody else is handling customer service, returns, etc. So I mentioned those two big, obvious options, but there are others. So for electronics, for example, you might choose to purchase from Best Buy online, even if you have a Best Buy store 5 or 10 minutes away. The convenience of buying online is helpful. You certainly would want to do some research online anyway. And buying something from Best Buy, even if it's available through Amazon, could have some advantages, such as maybe you get the cash back. If you're part of the Best Buy Rewards program, you can get some cash back. And if you buy enough products from Best Buy, either in the store or online, that accumulates to a certain dollar level or points level or something, and you become, you know, an elite customer. And so you'll get longer periods of time for returns and things like that. And other local stores may have similar benefits. Certainly Target is another example where you may have a Target store in your community and you might like to shop at Target online. And maybe their products sold by Target online that you can pick up in the store, but that aren't necessarily stocked on a regular basis in the store. So you can get the best of both worlds. You can get the convenience of having online ordering, but also the convenience of being able to just take something back to the store if you need to return it, and also that feeling of supporting your local economy in some way. But these are all, you know, online vending purchasing options. To take that a little bit further to the next level, I would say, let's say you want to purchase a backpack or a tent or some product that might be available through REI. That's an outdoor fitters, outdoor camping supply store. And those are not as plentiful and readily accessible as something like Best Buy or Staples or whatever. You know, they're going to be more Staples stores around than there are REI. So, but in any event, you might like the REI mission, or maybe there's an REI store within, you know, a half an hour or an hour away, but you want to buy directly from REI. And what you're going to notice is that, sort of like these Best Buy purchases, when you buy from REI, you can become essentially a part owner or a co-op member of REI. You get benefits, you get better return opportunities, and there's just a lot of, good that can happen when you buy directly from, essentially, it's like a vertical market, but you're buying an REI product that was made by REI. The brand name is REI, and you're buying it from an REI store. You know, if you need customer service, there's no question about where you're going to go to get that customer service. If you buy a brand product from somebody that's not the original company making it, things can get more complicated. And sometimes you'll shop for something on Amazon and find that the price that you pay for a product might be higher on Amazon than from the actual, you know, company that's selling it. And there can be generally two reasons for that. Possibly Amazon has identified that for some reason the market value of that product is increasing. There's an increasing demand for it. And so Amazon allows the pricing to go up. And they see that as an opportunity to make a little more money. And, you know, if you were to go to REI to buy your tent directly, you could save a lot of money. It doesn't always happen, but sometimes it happens. Amazon also has this attitude, or is trying to essentially build up their brand, if you can call it that, so that they are perceived to be a premier value-added vendor, seller, so that people, you know, instead of buying from directly from the company, they might want to buy from Amazon because they're a Prime member, because shipping is free, because returns are easy, or something like that. But those are things to weigh, you know, at this top level. Where are you going to buy the product from? And I would say there are those sort of three tiers, either, you know, directly from like REI or an Apple store or whatever, you know, directly from the company, or you can go to something like Target or Best Buy, where you might have a brick and mortar presence in your community and you want to go there and pick it up. You can also have it shipped to your home. Staples is another example of that. So that's the second tier, I guess. And then the broader option would be to go with something like Amazon, where there's not an Amazon store in your community. You're not supporting local jobs or local economy, but you want some convenience from that. Another advantage of Amazon, at least for product research, is that you can see in one place a lot of different products for sale and look at some reviews. Those reviews, you know, may have greater or lesser value depending on how authentic they are. It's common today for companies to, you know, buy reviews. They're just fake reviews to make their products and company look better. But in general, you know, it's helpful just to jump on Amazon and see the variety of things that are available, and you might be introduced to some new brands or products, but you might still then decide to buy from a local store. Okay, so that's the top level. Where are you going to buy from? And you may not even make that decision at the outset of your research. You might kind of check a variety of different sellers and decide to buy from the one that has the lowest price for the same product. The next level down, I would say, is the seller or vendor. So in some cases, you know, Amazon is selling products that are part of their Amazon Basics brand or line. And in that case, if you're buying like a USB hub or something that's an Amazon Basics product, then it's sold by Amazon. The brand is Amazon. It's, you know, presumably manufactured by Amazon or a third party that they've requested this to be made from. But there are going to be on Amazon sellers who are selling their product, maybe a product they've made, and they're selling that on Amazon, and perhaps Amazon is holding the inventory in a warehouse and shipping it, but the actual seller is some other third party that's doing that. And there are some third-party sellers who may want to do the shipping fulfillment themselves. And so when you place an order through Amazon, the payment goes through Amazon, and the order information, but basically then the seller is getting that shipped off to you. And of course, that's very common with eBay. You'll see lots of different sellers and they all have different ratings based on their responsiveness and how well they handle the sale. And sometimes these sellers on Amazon are selling their own product, but sometimes they're selling another product. It might be, somebody like Bob's Electronics Barn. I'm just making this up, but Bob's Electronics Barn sells Sony cameras. And so you buy this Sony camera on Amazon and it's being essentially shipped to you. And the sort of customer service and warranty process, I guess, would be from Bob's Electronics Barn. So now you have multiple organizations, companies involved. You have Sony making the camera, Bob's Electronics Barn maybe holding the inventory and shipping it out, Amazon handling the sale. It can get a little more complicated if you're trying to track down, you know, who's responsible for helping me with support issues for my Sony camera. Do you go to Sony? Do you go to Bob's Electronics Barn? Do you go to Amazon? So that's something to be aware of. So when I mentioned, though, the vendor, whether the vendor is also the manufacturer or the vendor is selling something made by someone else, it's important to find out who that vendor is, who is the entity responsible for customer service concerns or support needs. And you want to have a vendor that has a good reputation. Because you might buy the same product from Bob's Electronics Barn, but decide to buy it from Dave's Electronics Barn. And it turns out at Dave's Electronics Barn, they're selling something that it says Sony on it, but it's actually an imitation product. It's not authentic. Or maybe it's authentic, but it's refurbished. Or it's being sold as new, but you can tell it's been packaged up. It was returned previously. So there, or you call Dave's Electronics Barn and there's nobody answering the phone, or their hours are very limited. So there are all kinds of problems that can arise from, you know, dealing with a vendor that is not as reputable as you would want it to be. So know your vendor and know your store selling company. So you pick Best Buy or Amazon or whatever. You want to make sure you're picking a company that you like to buy from. And then the vendor within there that you're using a vendor, if that's relevant, that has a good reputation. And then the manufacturer. Now we think of manufacturers like Dell or Sony or HP or Apple or these different brands. Some of them have their own factories. I think there is an Apple factory in Texas. There's been news of that being moved to China, but you know, there are times, situations where, like Tesla, for example, Tesla is not just some brand with some millennials sitting in Silicon Valley selling cars that are made really actually in factories in China. No, Tesla has a company, a brand, their own factories. It's a very vertical market, even to the point of having their own electricity service that they provide, you know, these recharging stations. So that relationship between vendor and manufacturer, they can be the same, they can be different, but you want then a manufacturer who has high quality standards for what's being manufactured, high quality components, either their own factory or a factory in some other country that is very carefully monitored to make sure the quality is consistent. And there are some manufacturers that are known for good quality. So you'll want to go with that. And within these three levels that I've been talking about, manufacturer, vendor, and store, there is another area of consideration that consumers often take into account. And that would be the policies and practices and general overall rating that somebody might give a company. might have nothing to do with the products, but how do they treat their employees? How do they treat their suppliers and vendors? How responsible are they as a global citizen? How much attention do they give to sustainability, recycling, minimal negative impact, reducing carbon footprint, etc.? So you might really like a certain product, and if you were asked why you like that product so much, you know, is it the flavor? Is it what? You'd say, no, the flavor's okay. You know, the price isn't that competitive. It's okay as far as price. But what I really like about this product is the company. You know, so there are people that are really motivated by a company that they can feel is worthy of supporting with their money. So that's definitely a factor on any of these levels: the manufacturer, vendor, and store. Then we would get down to the level of specific products to choose from. And maybe if we were to put a little layer in between the product and the manufacturer, we would put in their brand. So there are some companies that have different brands. They almost seem like entirely different products, product lines or whatever. And it might be under a different name, or it might just be a certain model line. For example, with Dell, there are different model lines that Dell sells. There are Inspiron products, and those are kind of geared toward the consumer. They might be more full-featured products, but maybe don't have the long-term support that something else would. The Dell Latitude line of laptop computers has long been known as a product line that big companies might buy, because they may buy, you know, 1,000 computers this year, and then they'll buy 1,000 more computers next year, and they want to make sure that the dock works on multiple models of computers, or they want to make sure the batteries are interchangeable, or something like that. So Dell makes an effort to have some standardization across a product line in that Latitude brand that they have. So Inspiron, more for the home user; Latitude, more for the business user. There's also the Optiplex line, which are more high-end workstations, but not really designed for gaming or a home user, might be more designed for a research lab. So that's another area. It's going to be more reliable, more robust, more heavy-duty, and last longer. But you pay a little more up front for that. So that's a good example of how a company might establish different brand expectations or model line expectations within a wider offering of products. And you'll see that with automotive companies. You know, Ford will have hybrid vehicles, and then smaller cars and muscle cars and trucks, and each of those different lines of vehicles, there will have expectations on the part of the customer as to what to expect when owning that product. So yeah, there is this kind of layer of brand possibly between the company and the product line. But there are also companies like Apple where they don't have, you know, an Inspiron line of laptop computers or something. They've created the MacBook and the MacBook Pro. I guess that's sort of a definition. But in general, it's all Apple Mac products. And there's an expectation of having a similarity of design, a similarity of user experience, and a similarity of quality across their entire product line. So they've chosen not to have, you know, these different brands. There are some companies that are so huge that they've acquired other companies, and they allow those companies that they've acquired to retain their identity and their product branding and all of that. So the parent company might be some company you wouldn't expect, and you might have a real big commitment to a certain brand and product, but really it's owned by some other company. Okay, so I hope that paints the landscape a bit of these different layers. And I would say it is sort of like buying a car, you know, you'll probably start out and you have an idea in mind that you really want to buy from a dealership because you perceive there to be some advantages there in terms of selection or having a salesperson that might be helping you pick just the right car for your needs or something like that. So that is a choice. Other people already know they're going to buy a car used, or they're going to buy it through a different channel than a traditional dealership. And so similarly, when you're starting out in the purchase process, you may already know your choice of store because you have a favorite store that you always go back to, either generally for lots of different kinds of goods or specifically for like electronics. You might have a store that you go to. And there are others besides the ones I mentioned. There's Tiger Direct and Newegg. Those are popular for electronics. And a lot of lesser known online stores that aren't as popular or well known as, say, Amazon. Okay, so now that we've laid out that landscape, though, I would suggest just an approach to this is to say, you know, learn a little bit about the vendors, or maybe you already have one in mind. Do some research across multiple stores, but it does help to kind of repeatedly buy from the same store just because you have your account there. You can look up order history. You may get some extra pull as a customer if you've been with the same store a long time and have a long purchase history, and they might say, oh, you know, normally we don't issue refunds after a certain period of time and whatever, but they'll do you these favors because you've been a loyal customer. That can sometimes happen. And then just the familiarity of the process. You already have your credit card saved, whatever. So it does help. But now, in the buying process, this second level I talked about, the vendor, you'll want to do some research on the vendor if it's a vendor that's not familiar. And when you're on, and I'm going to use Amazon as an example, but other stores will have a similar experience. You know, you list the products that might satisfy what you're looking for, and you look at the reviews. So there are going to be reviews of the product. There may also be separate reviews of a certain vendor. And you'll want to take into account that some of those reviews can be fake. And one way to get some measure of the authenticity of reviews is that there are these online services that evaluate and analyze, using a little bit of artificial intelligence, the perceived or expected authenticity of reviews for certain products. It works with Amazon and Best Buy and other vendors, eBay. And so that might help spot some fake reviews. And the fake reviews could be identified with a larger base of data by noticing, oh, look, here's the same reviewer who's posted 1,000 reviews across Amazon, Best Buy, you know, eBay, like the same reviewer. And like, is it likely that they purchased 12 different laptops and kept them? Unlikely, you know. So if the same person is posting reviews for all these different products, pretty soon it starts to look like that might not be a reputable review. And if you have the same cluster of reviewers from one product to another within a company, you can kind of notice, oh, this looks like paid reviews. So, yeah, there are these services that can do that. One service that I've used, I don't know a lot about it, but it seems to work pretty well, is fakespot.com. So fakespot.com. And you put in a URL for a certain product. This works really well for Amazon. It can give you a bit of a score for the product reviews. And the score then will come back and it'll tell you a little bit about those product reviews. And it can also go in to Amazon and kind of accumulate some information about the company. So if a company repeatedly is using fake reviews, they would get a poor score. And that can be really helpful to know because you don't want to be misled by a bunch of fake reviews and think a product's really good. And it turns out those fake reviews are just kind of balancing out all of the legitimate negative reviews. And this is becoming more common. So you would want to rely on some of these resources that are out there. There's also Wikibuy is one. I've not used that, and I don't, you know, these aren't endorsements or anything. I'm just saying it's something to look into. Another is Camel, Camel, Camel. I'm sure over the years, these names and companies or services are going to change, and some will close down, some will get bought up by others, but it's that kind of thing you want to look for. Reputation analysis for these reviews and companies, and then also for pricing, things like Camel, Camel, Camel or Wikibuy to give you a sense of what the pricing is that's out there. Sometimes the differences are pretty small, but if the differences are significant and you're concerned about keeping your costs down and don't care too much about continuity regarding like where you've purchased something from, then you may want to just look for the lowest price option. Particularly, as I mentioned, you know, the obvious sources like Amazon and Best Buy can be compared with the lesser known product sources and vendors or stores like Newegg or Tiger Direct or B&H Photo and some of these others that have been around for a long time that sell online and may have some really competitive pricing. And so using a price comparison tool can help with that buying process and with saving some money. I had a challenging purchase to make recently. I needed to buy a battery for a laptop computer for someone, and it's an older laptop computer, so it would be a battery that's not being purchased by the hundreds or thousands or whatever. There are going to be very few purchases of these batteries. There's quite a bit of competition among different people selling these old batteries or new batteries that are compatible with older equipment. And so I didn't have like 2,000 reviews to look through. There might just be 20 reviews or 30 reviews on these different batteries. And in this case, I was looking on Amazon. And it took a lot of research to determine which of the batteries were really of legitimate, reliable quality and which ones should be avoided. And I really had to go through every stage and layer that I've discussed previously here in this episode to figure out which battery to buy and from what vendor through Amazon. So one general rule in this particular search was to look for a battery where the vendor selling it had the same name as is printed on the box of the product, and that same name and same brand is printed on the battery itself. So at least I ruled out the possibility of an unknown manufacturer or an unknown company or brand or vendor. This was all tied together, so at least a little bit of a vertical market in that regard. And so there were a few that met that criteria, but some of them had very poor ratings for authenticity and reliability as far as the company. And so it really kind of narrowed down just one battery that seemed like there's a pretty good chance it's going to be reliable, and, you know, work out of the box and work for a long time and have some good longevity. But we'll have to see. It's going to arrive tomorrow. And that was that, you know, process of tracking that down is what really inspired and prompted this podcast today, because I realized, you know, for most people, you might think, oh, I'm just going to, you know, go to Amazon or Newegg or Best Buy or whatever and search for this replacement battery, and whatever comes up, if it has some good ratings, I'll just buy it. And you really have to dig into the individual reviews, look for fakes, try to figure out if the complaints that the customers have are going to impact you significantly. You know, sometimes there's a complaint where they say, oh, this battery only lasts, you know, 3 hours instead of 3.5 hours, or, you know, some other such thing, that maybe the fit and finish wasn't just perfect, but it still works fine. You know, there are certain complaints that result in a 1-star or 2-star review that maybe don't warrant that. But you have to dig down into those reviews to see those details. And you have to do a little research, because you're not dealing with a company that you sort of know about, like Sony. If you're buying a battery that's a Sony battery from Sony for a Sony camera, you don't have to do a lot of research. But when you're searching for a battery, which is a potentially volatile component that could either be really good quality or not be good quality, you want to do that research. And there aren't big, well-known companies selling these, so it does take more of that research to get a good product. And with Amazon, at least there are free returns, so there is that part of the research process. You know, if you kind of limit how many hours you're going to spend on reading about something, eventually you buy something, and then the testing continues. Because if that product arrives and it really doesn't meet your expectations, if it was advertised incorrectly or falsely, or if it was misleading, then those are grounds for returning something. And usually then the store, the seller, will cover the cost of return shipping, and they'll apologize and say, oh, we're sorry, didn't realize this person was using advertising that's misleading. But some of these things you can only know by really just getting your hands on a product and seeing how well it works. And then, you know, hopefully you can contribute back to the reviews and give your own review and help other consumers on their quest for a product to find what might work best and what to avoid. Another factor in this purchase process was delivery time. The person I'm helping needed a quick turnaround for this product and for this repair. So instead of, you know, I might have waited longer. Sometimes you'll look through the available products on Amazon, for example, and you'll see one can be delivered by tomorrow and it's in stock. Another one might have better ratings and be from a better manufacturer and a more favored vendor, but then that product's not available till next week or for 2 weeks, and that's too long to wait. So there are a lot of factors that are going to determine the purchase decision, the ultimate product that you buy, and some of those can be unrelated to the manufacturer or vendor or store or whatever. It's just a matter of you need something quickly. And, you know, when time is essential, then sometimes people don't end up with the best value or the best product. And that also then makes it more challenging, because you're kind of scrunched down into, oh, I would have had 40 different places I could have bought this, or different products I could have selected. But now that we're crunching the time down into a 24 or 48 hour period, now you really have to dig down into these few items that are available in a quick period of time, which one of those are really legitimately going to be a good choice. As a tech consultant, I like to take good notes and document the work that I do, because much of that work really requires a lot of time, a lot of attention to detail, and a lot of thought goes into something as simple as a battery purchase. And I think it's important for customers to know that it's not as easy as just, you know, taking 5 minutes on Amazon to order a battery and then, you know, putting it in 10 minutes or something. You really have to plan on some additional time at any point in the process to dive a little deeper. And so I will provide usually written notes, sometimes an article, maybe a video or a podcast that explains some of the process. And even though something simple like a battery replacement could take a half an hour to an hour of time, I usually won't bill for all my time, because it really is just hard for people to understand the importance of doing this purchase research, or how much time it takes to find a compatible quality product of value. And you can try to explain that to somebody, but to really dive into all these details, that's, for most people, not going to be of interest. They just want the product fixed or solved, problem solved. In the past, I would do a lot of my work at businesses, on site, or in someone's home, and they could see that I was working, and so they may not fully follow, you know, all the work that I was doing, but because of the screenshots and the notes, at least it could be detailed out to show, you know, this is the work that got done. Sort of like when you take your car to a mechanic, at least they'll give you kind of a review of what was needed and what parts were needed. So in the same way, I like to document my work. And I think then people can better realize and understand the value of what they're getting. And they can see that, you know, whatever I might be charging for my time is actually a discount or just a portion of covering the actual time and energy that went into it. And I think that just helps with customer relations, because people can then appreciate it if you've given them a discount. If they don't understand what goes into a process and they get a bill, depending on their expectation, you may have, you know, told them ahead of time what you think it might be or something, but still, you know, when people are paying for something, they may feel that they're paying a lot more than what they expected to, or than what they thought they should have to pay for a certain repair. I had a situation come up recently with a laptop computer that needed to be kind of have Windows reinstalled, basically. And computers have a restore process that really is pretty simple. You hold down a button when you're starting it, and then you go into the recovery mode and you kick off the recovery, and then pretty much sit and wait and do something else while it does the work for you. So I told this person, gave him kind of an estimate of how much time I thought it would take to rebuild or restore their computer. And it turned out it was a real hassle. The buttons that you would expect to hold down were not working. And so I had to do a lot of research into this particular model of computer from this particular manufacturer to find out, how does one get into the BIOS? How do you boot up to a recovery partition if that's available? Or how would you boot up to a USB Windows installation media? And so it was just lots of searching, lots of finding people posting similar questions. Like, you know you're in trouble when you do a search for something and all you find are people posting that they're having the same problem, but nobody has the answer, you know? So that ended up taking a lot of time and research, and I had to kind of take breaks from it and go do other things and come back to it. So it stretched over several days, you know? And yet in that case, I ended up just charging that person a minimal amount for just a portion of the time I invested in it, because number one, I'd already given them an expectation that it should be pretty simple if the hardware was working, which it was. The hardware was working, you know, so I thought, yeah, it should be pretty simple. It shouldn't take much time. So they had an expectation. I had an expectation. And this just happens. So there's sometimes in business where you're going to do a bunch of work and it's going to be hard for the person to appreciate that and understand it. And you're not going to get paid for your work. And you're going to feel like, well, you might feel discouraged about that. But the thing to know is that overall, you look at the last 100 projects you worked on. Yes, some are going to fall into that category, but most are going to be as you expected and as the customer expected. And a positive experience. So you just learn to accept that there are going to be those experiences along the way. It's just like if you were farming, you know, not every acre is going to produce the same amount of corn. You're going to have some acres where there wasn't enough water and too much runoff or whatever, and then other acres of land where the water kind of settled in, it was too wet, the yield's going to be lower, you know, and then you're going to have these perfect little squares of land where you got just amazing yield. And wouldn't it be nice if you had that same yield across all of your fields or whatever? But, you know, it's just there are these variations. So the same is true in probably any kind of work. But the reason I mention that is that, you know, part of then this podcast episode is just to explain just one aspect of something that can at the surface seem like a simple job, just replace a battery, that there's a lot of research that goes into buying the battery. And then in the installation process, there are a lot of things to be careful about so that you don't do damage to the battery or the computer. So there's a lot that can go into it. And my hope is then that this podcast episode can serve that purpose of helping people understand that the work that goes into certain repair requests and things, and also for those doing their own repairs to have some general information about the purchase process and how to more effectively find quality and value online when they're shopping. If you have any questions or specific items that you're buying or wanting help with, I'm always happy to answer those. And you can submit a question through the resourcesforlife.com contact page, or just, you know, through whatever avenues are available to reach me, Greg Johnson, and I'd be happy to answer those. So I appreciate you taking time to listen to this episode, and for those of you who follow along on the different episodes, I appreciate that. Appreciate all of the likes and the shares and the comments, and I look forward to sharing more with you again soon. Take care.